recording here in my it's my studio, it's my Qigong training Zenden, it's my mini office, it is my lounge room, so that's where we're at. It's a 15 by 15 little room, about 200 square feet. Starting episode 2 on this journey to share with you some inspiration, information that leads you to self-motivation. And self-motivation is intrinsically motivated by your true self and your core values to make this a better place. Have you heard? Perhaps we're here to create heaven on earth. Maybe heaven isn't somewhere you go. Heaven is where you are. And if you notice, for the majority of human beings on the planet, it is a living hell. And if it's a living hell for the majority, then it's a living hell for everybody. I don't care if you've carved out your piece of heaven, if you're not contributing to creating heaven on earth. For everybody, at least everybody that's willing to participate in creating heaven on earth, then that's what this podcast is all about. Do the cure. This is Dan Higerich, 6-time cancer survivor. And I preempt this episode with acknowledging that often you hear in the health and healing arts, the first step is the most important step. Have you heard that? The first step is the most important step. Let go of that first cigarette. Let go of that cup of coffee. Let go of, your couch potato-ism or whatever you want to say is your first step. But for me, I broke out a couple weeks ago to do the first episode, Miracles Don't Just Happen. If you haven't listened to it, go ahead and have a listen. It's about 25 minutes long. And today represents the next most important thing you need to do. And that is not just the first step, but the next step. Taking the next step, one at a time. That's what I'm here doing today, recording for the second time. We're going to find out where we go because I have nothing really planned except for to just show up and take the next step and see what wants to come up and out of me and into the heart and minds of you. And the last one, we had a couple of things we discussed, which was do the cure, of course, and that comes from my experience of going through having to face some demons in the terminal cancer that I had, supposed terminal cancer. I probably shouldn't label it that anymore. And I said that I was willing to do the cure, and so many people are asking, well, what's the cure? I mean, a simple answer is that preventing illness, disease, dysfunction, and delusion in your life, preventing it from happening, is the cure. And if you look at your own way of living and the way the whole structure of society and culture, for the most part, is set up, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure and obstacles in the way for you to actually be preventative. That's because we have a default program, at least in my humble opinion and observation, we have a program that's already installed called doing disease, dysfunction, and delusion. And the delusional part is that we don't even see that the program's running. We're proud of our disease, We're proud of our dysfunction, and we are proud of our delusion, because if we woke up from the delusion, we might have a scary awakening. It certainly was for me a little while back when I was awakened into the fact that I had a very aggressive non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at 29 years old, just getting married, and I was awakened. But I did what Joseph Campbell refers to as call to action. That was my moment of call to action. One of many, wasn't the only call to action, but when I was invited by Dr. Lawrence Cloud by a powerful question, Dan, how did you get into the business of cancer? You can dissect that question a lot of ways. How did I, the real I, get into the business of cancer? I mentioned in that previous podcast that I was a slave to the mind. My true authentic self was a slave to the mind, and the mind was a conditioned program by family, society, and culture to live in a certain way that was to do disease, dysfunction, and delusion. So that question woke me up out of it. And it set me on a course to answer that question, because if I could answer that question reasonably, then I could actually save my soul and start living with some inspiration and dignity and coming from the true self more so as I progress in my own evolution. And I could help a lot of other people do the same. And even in that first meeting with the oncologist, I think we both knew that chemotherapy does not answer that powerful question, does it? Dan, how did you get into the business of cancer? Well, geez, doc, isn't it obvious from your point of view I haven't done enough chemotherapy? You know, I mean, if I got some radiation proactively, you know, years ago, I probably wouldn't have cancer, right? Oh, maybe you should have cut preventatively. It might be in my genes that I have some faulty immune system, so you might just rip it out and do some surgery and take the whole immune system out. And then I'll just carry on with creating a new type of normal life. Nope. Those don't answer the question. But I felt that chemotherapy at the time was the only option I knew, and it would buy me the time to investigate, explore, to become a detective, to answer that question. If you further dissect that question, Dan, how did you get into the business of cancer? Cancer is a business, folks. It's a very profitable one. And all of you who are in business for yourself, what do we like? What do you really appreciate? Repeat business? I mean, how do you stay in business if you don't have the customer base? So if cancer is a business model and it's very profitable, how does it stay alive if there's no more cancer to treat or no more people to treat with their products and services? So you can see, unconsciously, many people have a psychological investment in their livelihood and identity in disease. That's not my work. Dr. Samuel Epstein, he does a lot of work with that in terms of the business of cancer. And if you want, you can go ahead and find your way to his work. I haven't read much of it because I kind of lived it. Takes me away from doing my practice so that I can be doing the cure. And reading a book is one thing, but doing the cure is another. Might be both part, but and I further stated that people have the right to view cancer as a disease, but I can assure you that in this plane of living, that if someone says cancer is a disease, that we live in a very contradictory plane of living. Opposites are complementary. They could be adversary, neutralizing, antagonistic and agonistic, whatever you want to say, but or paradoxical even. That's another one that comes to mind. So if someone says cancer is a disease, they're 100% correct in their frame of reference, in their frame of mind. But I also can hold the statement, cancer is not a disease. Now, if you look at cancer is a disease, you're going to explore it from a whole different view than if you actually say cancer is not a disease. I kind of had this metaphor as that scientists look at cancer as a disease, so therefore they get the microscope up and they narrow down on the cancer cell and they go right into it. People like myself, though, when I said cancer is not a disease, but in the expression of the disease, I whipped out the telescope and I started to pull back and see the broad, big picture of life. And I held cancer as just the symptom. So now here we are, discussing these ways of conceptually reframing cancer so that we can actually get busy with doing the cure. But we have to understand what might be we be curing. What is it that we're actually curing? If cancer is a symptom, if cancer is not a disease but an expression of the disease, if heart disease is not a disease but a symptom and an expression of the disease, think about it from this way. What's his name? Andreas Moritz. He's pretty internationally famous healer. He's no longer with us. He's parted from this earth plane of living, but he wrote a great book, The Amazing Liver, Gallbladder, Flush, and he put together a wonderful, you know, legacy of healing books and art. One of those books he gifted me with was Cancer is Not a Disease, It's a Survival Mechanism. It's actually trying to keep you alive longer so you actually wake up. That you awaken into what I had referred to in my first episode, health is the foundation to life, love is the purpose for living. And if you want another statement that I took from that beautiful book that he put so well, I highly recommend everyone get a copy of it. It is, cancer is not a disease. It is a survival mechanism by Andreas Moritz. What he says is, he puts a spin on it. What if cancer does not make a person sick? It is the sickness in the person that causes cancer. I laugh about it because it's so true for me. I was a sick human being internally. I was a hollow chocolate bunny at Easter instead of a nice solid chocolate bunny. I was that hollow chocolate bunny. All surface, all superficial, not a whole lot inside. Of course, that's just not figuratively. Of course, the best part of me was deeply held inside like a genie trapped in a bottle, and cancer was rubbing me the right way in order for me to come out and play, and here I am playing with you. Again, some things are worth repeating. Just a framework. It's just a consideration. What if cancer does not make a person sick? It's the sickness in the person that creates and causes cancer. Which way do you think would feel more empowering to you or to someone else? Or which one do you think makes someone feel disempowered? And disempowerment is, of course, for lack of better words, is a victim. of their circumstance. Now, I know you might stretch your mind into some of the political arenas of some of the injustices and inhumane things that are going on in the world. Let's just put those aside for now and just stay here with me, with cancer, and that statement I just made. Cancer is not a disease, but an expression of the disease. Cancer does not make a person sick. It's the sickness in the person that causes cancer. Which one do you think is more empowering, more in alignment with you coming into wholeness and unity into your own true nature? Or which one is separating you further from your true nature and hiding underneath being victimized by the script, by the American script, by the cultural script, by the medical model script, by the program, the matrix? So if we are to understand at the biological level, Raymond Francis wrote in his book, Never Be Sick Again, he had his framework well put out about the nature of illness and where it starts. He says it starts in the cell. Your cell, or yourself in my case. Never Be Sick Again by Raymond Francis. Cell malfunction. The cell is not working optimally and it starts to malfunction. And it's caused by two things. Nutritional deficiency. The cell is malnourished. And that causes a rise in cellular toxicity. And both equates to cellular inflammation, cellular miscommunication. And would we even further expand that to cellular infertility? It dies too young and it no longer can reproduce, or if it duplicates itself, it duplicates itself in an unhealthy state. This is why Dr. Dan Pompa has a beautiful saying: if you want to get well, you must fix the cell. Dan Pompa is an internationally recognized health practitioner, teacher, and an inspiration. He's an author of several books. He's a loving husband. He's got a number of children, and he's a great human being. Check him out. He's on the web, of course. He's on the web, internet somewhere. Dr. Dan Pompa, P-O-M-P-A. If you want to get well, you must fix the cell. Now, I don't know if he knows Raymond Francis, but Raymond Francis wrote the book a long time ago, before Dan Pompa was active in his healing process, personally and professionally. Cell malfunctions. From nutritional deficiencies and leading to excesses or toxicity. So if we were just to bring it into a literal realm of thinking, what do we need to do? We actually need to get nourished at the cellular level. We need to get the toxins out, reduce the inflammation. And in order to do so, you have to do the cure. You have to do the very voluntary acts that'll help you become nourished. In my work, I don't just reduce it into the biology. You have to become nourished emotionally. You have to take a look at your belief structures, whether they're serving or not serving you. And if so, how are they serving you? Because belief systems are really all powerful and they can really be inflammatory at the cellular level. And you have to be spiritually nourished, inspired by life, just like when you were born, being inspired and curious and joyous and on this adventure. And then we have to release or detoxify from all those things that we've taken in that no longer serve us. All those emotions that we harbor internally. Gotta let them go. In fact, I know for me personally, the most powerful way to start your health and healing journey is to let go of something that no longer serves you, which means let go of things that cause you a tremendous amount of stress right now. And I'm not talking about good stress. I'm talking about negative stress. Perhaps in a future show, we'll do a talk on good stress versus bad stress. For now, I'm just in a stream here with Raymond Francis and Dr. Dan Pompa, right? The one disease that we all have to a more or lesser degree is cell malfunction due to nutritional deficiencies and cellular excess or toxicity, both of which creates cellular inflammation in the cell membrane and the cell and the membranes of the organelles within the cell. And that also leads to cell miscommunication and interference. If you expand it, yourself is malnourished. Your true self is malnourished. It's not being recognized, appreciated. It's not being held in the light. It's taken a back seat to mind stuff, to all the mind, the stuff, the chatter, the 95% of the thoughts that are programmed into us that are actually repetitive and negative. Just think of how often you might be internally complaining or gossiping. So yourself, your real self, is malnourished. But if you're listening to this, this hopefully is offering you a little bit of nourishment to start detoxifying all those negative thoughts and perhaps emotions that might be stored in the dark corners of, I guess, the abyss. I don't know where they're stored, really, but they are captured in the body. So look around us in America. We are the richest malnourished country on the planet. We are the wealthiest malnourished group of people as a collective in the modern world, for the most part. And here we are with the internet and all this stuff, and we spend more money on health care. We also spend more money on natural health care, and we're still malnourished. So we're going to start bringing ideas along the way on this journey. I just want to be able to share stories and just download. I'm not here with any script. I didn't even write anything down. I just freestyle, streams of consciousness, trying to bring you guys something, some of the best information. Or to check that inspiration. Inspiration is more conceptual and abstract. It's not that this is the top five things you're going to do to make yourself get well. But first, you got to buy it, and you got to go to the weekend retreat, and then you got to go to the next weekend retreat, and then the next one, and then the next one. Now, I'm giving you the concepts, because if you can get the concept, you know how to take care of yourself. How do I know that? People who have created their own incredible survival or healing miracles, they all did it in a different way. If I narrow that down to just cancer survivors, people who have really turned their survivorship into thriving, they've all done it in a different way. So it tells me that how they did it differs. But there's got to be some common denominators amongst those that create their miracles. What do you think that might be? What might be a common denominator amongst people who create extraordinary stories? Miracle healing stories, etc. I don't know, faith might be one. Trust. I'll quote Dan Popper again, because it's important to hear what he said. He said he saw pain or purpose in his pain. And I don't know if he, you know, if that's an original thing or if he took that a little bit from Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl's work, where the people that were able to go through the Holocaust and thrive afterwards were those that found purpose in their suffering that was bigger than themselves. They saw that their suffering had purpose. I had a knowing that I was not going to pass away at that young age from so-called cancer. I just knew it. I had a knowing. I knew that this process had some meaning. And I was exploring it just on faith. It was more like, you know, people ask me, how did you do it? And I'm like, why don't you ask me why? Why not ask me why I was doing it? And one of the reasons why is so I could be here right now with you, so I can share with you this process that I went through, this incredible, I guess, odyssey, venture, adventure. One of the things I want you to know, too, is when I was first diagnosed, what really came up, I didn't know it at the time, but it was upon some of my self-reflection looking back, was it immediately put me in this feeling of isolation. I felt very isolated with my illness. And because I was emotionally illiterate and emotionally really immature, I didn't know how to even access what I was feeling or to ask for help, especially emotional help. I was afraid if I asked for emotional help, I would be rejected. Probably one of my number one emotional wounds, abandonment and rejection, second to shame, so that it would be rejected. So why would I want to go into that pain of asking for help emotionally if it was going to be rejected? And then the rejection itself created more pain. You know, I've grown from then, so now that's over the dam, but it created an immense amount of isolation. And then in 2000, I had a massive awakening at a gun club when I was going to try and take my life. That's right. I was suffering so badly internally that I wanted to end the pain. So I went and I registered, in order to get access to a gun, I registered for a safety gun class at a gun club. I took the safety class just in case I needed it down the road. And then one morning I couldn't take it anymore and I went to the gun club. I signed out at 22 semi-automatic. I think it had, I don't know how many rounds, maybe 9, maybe 10, maybe a few more. I don't know. I wasn't present, that much present. But when I went in there, it was such a beautiful setting for it. There was nobody in there, just me. And when I went into the gun club, and I went into a range, this was my first time alone shooting in the range. And I had so much energy flowing through me from fear and from pain that I then put the gun in my mouth and I was just trying to get some kind of courage. Do it. Do it. Go ahead, tough guy, do it. And then another little voice came in and said, you're not going to do it. You don't have any courage. You're a pussy. You're a fag. That's all programming, by the way. That's memory growing up. That's how we peer pressured each other when we were little. You're a fag, you're a pussy, you're a wimp. Come on, do it. That was peer pressure when we were young adolescents and teenagers. But then a third voice came in and said, if you two are going to argue over this, why don't you just take a shot at the target? And I went through this volley between the two. You're going to do it? No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. I put it in the back of my head because I figured if I survived cancer six times up to this point, that if I shot myself in the through the mouth, I'd probably survive it, but be in worse shape and then put more pressure on other people and make their lives more miserable, which is quite noble to think of others in that case as well. And I put the gun right at the back of my head under the lump of knowledge so I could shoot the bullet into the medulla oblongata, because that would cease life very quickly and cleanly. But that inner voice, that deep inner voice, said, take a shot at the target. Try and hit the center of the target. So I said, okay. I listened. And I focused all my attention on the center of that target. So much so that the target got bigger and bigger and bigger until it felt like it, and I saw that it was like filling the entire room. I had no pain. I had no suffering. I had a light smile like I do right now on my right now I have a little smile. The same thing I was experiencing then. And I shot all the bullets into the target. I emptied the chamber. I entered the present moment. So profoundly, that awakening, I looked at the gun and I said, guns don't kill people. The suffering of man, the suffering of people kills people. This gun just saved my life. Isn't that irony? Isn't that part of our contradictory plane of living we spoke about just a short while ago in the beginning of this podcast, that this is a contradictory, paradoxical plane of living? Guns don't kill people. The suffering of people kills people. Conscious or unconscious suffering doesn't matter. I felt so high that day. And that was another awakening into my true self. My true self was victorious that day. Take a shot at the target. That was my true voice. But it also, paradoxically, ironically, stimulated another form of suffering, which was the loneliness of awakening. The isolation of illness and disease and the loneliness of awakening into your true nature, because our society doesn't have a lot of things in place for people that awaken into their true nature. And just like a newborn needs a mother or some guardians, someone who awakens into their true nature also needs a spiritual mother and father or guardian to protect that newborn or that rebirth. Because it can drive you crazy. So I was sitting there with that awakening, and like I said, it drove me so crazy, I had to go to the psychiatric ward a week later and check myself in under the influence of that experience, which was, I was saying to the psychiatric interns and people taking me in, I think there was three psychiatrists that were taking my information and taking my data and my story. And I said, I brought myself in because I was under psychiatric care and I had an epiphany and I need to learn how to self-love myself. That's the only way out of this particular predicament I'm in. The way out is the way inward. The way out of my pain was the way into the pain. The way out of this predicament is the way in. And the way in is an expression of self-love. And they all laughed at me. They smirked and laughed. And they said, "Dan, that's your mental illness talking. We need to adjust your medication." And I was hit with the ultimate feeling of rejection and abandonment. It didn't even compare to the feeling, or maybe it did compare to the feeling of the rejection and abandonment I had 2 years or about a year prior to that when my wife left for another man. She left our marriage after 5 years of me going through this illness, this isolation of illness. Going through this process, she wound up finding another man to meet her needs. And that drove me crazy, and I had a great learning, of course. I'll share it in another podcast, but for right now, just know that about a year and a half before that, my wife left for our marriage for another man, and that's what also precipitated me to go into this crazy spell and under psychiatric care. So they smirked, and I got so angry, so rejected, I couldn't say anything. I just felt so contracted, and 48 hours later, inside the psychiatric ward, my cancer came back for the sixth time. That's our medical model. Disease, dysfunction, and delusion. Because, let's face it, they're human beings too, and they're all doing disease. They're all doing it. It's a program. It's a software. Can't help it. So I found my way out of there in 7 days, and that was the moment I said I will never, ever rely on medicine directly for my ailments unless it is acute in nature, because I'm playing in life to its fullest and I harm myself or I hurt myself or I twist my ankle or I break a bone or... That's when I went home. I went home in this incredible feeling of isolation of the illness, which the tumors were back, and this incredible loneliness of awakening. Talk about contradictory and paradoxical in our life. There was no support for either of those that I knew of, because it's really not in the forefront of our medical model, and it's certainly not in the forefront of our culture and society. I think it's growing, of course, because we're having this conversation now. And I'm hoping to make a bigger impact to make it grow even more. So that we can do the cure. So there you go. What are we curing? Just... I don't know, sit with it for the next couple days. What are you curing? This is Dan Hegrich, 6-time cancer survivor. You're listening to Do the Cure. Please, if you haven't listened to episode 1, please do so. That was Miracles Don't Just Happen. And certainly if you enjoyed this, please share this with other people that you think would benefit from it. And I ask that you might reach out and not just send it to them, but maybe ask permission first and then send it. So if you're reaching out to someone that you know that might be in pain or suffering and you say, "Hey, I listened to this podcast. Can I have your permission to send this to you?" So don't just send it blindly. It's like junk mail. But if they say yes, then there's a part of them that's interested, and that's a great sign. They may not say no, for pride's sake, but nevertheless, just ask permission. It gives you psychological clearance rather than pushing any opinions on them. That's what I needed back then, was people to just ask permission too. So that's it for now. We spent about 40 minutes. Thank you for taking your precious time to listen to this. I hope you've received some value and that it sparked at least something inside you. If you sift through it, there's got to be something you can take away. Many blessings. Until we meet in person, keep your body tuned up and your soul tuned in.